Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming back promptly to this breakout, which is Community Participation in the Management and Conservation of Coastal Ecosystems. One of the three threads that we're weaving through the course of today. And after this afternoon, if you're signed up for them, there's a couple more sessions that relate to community-based participation, how people are doing things, and what kind of tools are out there. In this case, in this session, we're going to hear a few different examples of community engagement that's been going on here in Maine over time, different scopes and different purposes. But in the end, it's largely about how do we get people from communities, whether they're in government or non-government or just a lay person, to plug in and begin thinking about how they are part of the communities that they're trying to conserve and manage. So my name's Paul Anderson. I'm just here to introduce the session. I'm going to hand it over to Heather Leslie in a moment. We have on slate three speakers in addition to Heather. But at the moment, Mark Demuros has gone missing. So we'll look out for Mark, and we'll bring him in when we can. In the meantime, we're going to hear from, you're going first, right, Heather? Yeah. Heather Leslie is up from Brown University, and she'll tell you a bit about herself. She's got a great book that just came out. She did the editing on with Karen McLeod called Ecosystem-Based Management for the Oceans. Very comprehensive and readable, and you might look out for that. I have a copy. And she'll tell you a bit more about that and give you some of her perspective on ecosystem-based management principles on really a national scale, and then try to bring that home. And then what we're going to do is follow up with our three panelists, hopefully, in this order. Paul Dest is the director of the Wells National Estuarine Research Reserve down in Wells, Maine. But he's going to be talking about the Mount Agamenicus to the Sea project. It's got, I don't know, 10-year history, probably more. And he'll tell you more about that, kind of a broader watershed approach to some of these issues and connectivity that they've striven for in that region of the state. Our intention is to have Mark Demuros, who's the director of the Damariscotta River Association, come and talk about that watershed and their perspective, which is sort of a smaller community maybe than the larger watershed perspective that Mount Agamenicus represents. And then we're going to finish with an even smaller perspective, honing in on a particular bay. Many of you have heard about Taunton Bay up in Hancock County and some of the innovations that have been going on there. And John Soles has creeped back from retirement for this gig. We appreciate that, John. John spent a lot of time in state government, both with the Department of Environmental Protection and more recently with the Department of Marine Resources, where I had the pleasure to work with him. He, along with other folks, helped to facilitate and move a fairly innovative approach to natural resource management in Taunton Bay, particularly extractive resources. But he'll touch on some of the challenges and hopes of that project. So my bookend remarks are that Maine has a rich history in community engagement. I think we do it well here, probably because we need to. And our decision-making tends to be more collaborative, I think, than other parts of the country. So there again, I think we've led a lot in terms of engaging communities. And certainly, many of you in this room and I have been involved a lot in building stewardship programs along the state where we get community members to become scientists and lay people to understand how they can contribute to the body of knowledge that we can use for managing natural resources. And again, I think Maine has been on the vanguard in that regard. So the parlance that we're touching on is ecosystem-based management, and I'll hand it over to Heather, who will touch on this. In my opinion, we humans are part of that ecosystem. In fact, it's more or less a human-dominated ecosystem, and therefore we're responsible for understanding how all the parts connect, and with that responsibility comes participation. So that's what this session is all about. I hope you learn a lot, and we hopefully have built time in for Q&A. We've delayed lunch until about 1 o'clock, so you have time for some questions and interaction and sharing of your thoughts. So with that, here's Heather Leslie.
Thank you, Paul. I'm just going to go to the head of the slides here.
Looks like it works.
Great. Okay. I think I need the mic. So thank you all for joining us this morning. It's fantastic to see such a great turnout. And thank you to Paul and the organizers for inviting me to participate in this session. I'm in southern New England now, as Paul said, but I spent about a year in Maine, over a decade ago, as an AmeriCorps volunteer working with folks from DMR and other agencies, so it's fantastic to have reasons to come back, and I also have an active Rocky Shore field program in this region, so the more reasons I have to spend time in Maine, the happier I am, so thank you for having me here. My role is to provide some national level context on how Maine's innovative efforts right now and over decades in the past, are how these innovative efforts are feeding in and really help motivate changes that we're seeing at the national level. And we heard from speakers in the plenary earlier today that there is a national level ocean policy task force that's been underway since June. They'll be releasing a draft report in December, so this next month is really an important window of time for all of us to weigh in on what we see as key issues that face the nation in terms of developing a coherent and comprehensive national ocean policy. And the Council on Environmental Quality is leading that effort, and there's commissioners from around the federal partners that are part of it. So I strongly encourage you to check out what they posted in terms of their interim national ocean policy. They'll be posting a framework for marine spatial planning in the coming weeks, and both of those are open to public comment as they come online. So if you just Google CEQ, Ocean Policy Task Force, it'll come up. Don't get lost in the Bush administration's previous ocean interagency working committee. Make sure you're at the Ocean Policy Task Force, because that's the current effort. And as I said before, the national level effort really is being inspired by what's going on here in Maine and elsewhere around the nation. The states are leading. The local communities are leading in terms of taking a more integrated approach. So I think that's something we all can be proud of. And also, it indicates that we have something to say about how the national policy develops. So just a few words of introduction, and then I'm going to turn it over to our core speakers. As we're all well aware, marine ecosystems are changing at an unprecedented pace and to a greater extent than we've seen before in human history, and certainly changes related to climate and the physical impacts of climate change are part of that, but there's a whole host of other activities and threats that contribute to those shifts, and we see those close to shore, but also further offshore in the North Atlantic. And again, it's not as though we can point to a single cause. There's important economic activities that we engage in, ranging from aquaculture to navigation to coastal development that contribute to these impacts. These aren't things that are going to go away, but they are activities that we need to be aware of what their impacts are, both positive and negative, and mitigate where we can. So we cannot blame a single cause, but together, these impacts and human activities are impacting the integrity of ocean ecosystems, and most importantly, I think in terms of our interests, they're impacting the delivery of ecosystem services, which are a whole host of benefits that marine systems provide. So for example, seafood production, the food that we get from the ocean, opportunities for recreation and education, and also supporting services like the cycling of nutrients in salt marshes are all services or benefits that we get for free from functioning natural environments. And there's many of these services, like seafood production, that we have a dollar value on, that we buy and trade in markets, so we're somewhat aware of those. But supporting services, like many provided by marshes, are really not on our radar screens. And that's an important part of the challenge facing us today. Another important part, which again was alluded to in one of the plenary speaker's comments, I believe, is the range of institutions that we have that deal with stewardship of our coastal and ocean waters. And right now, we manage our coastal and ocean waters and the activities within them in a fairly segmented way. If you think about fisheries management at the state or the national level, or how we deal with our wastewater, or how we manage and plan for coastal development, these are distinct domains. They involve a whole host of state and federal agencies, many of whom do not are not bound to talk with each other in a regular fashion. And so we're operating in isolation. And yet we know that all of these domains, all of these activities are connected to one another, not just in terms of ecosystems and the fact that fish swim between different parts of the shore where these different activities are going on, But we as people are also engaged or impacted by each of these domains, and institutions across these domains. And so this is part of why there's this conversation now about a national ocean policy and the need to take a more integrated approach to management. Right now there's just a lot of segmentation and confusion in terms of our institutional structure. Moreover, as we heard from the governor, there's a strong interest in offshore energy development, particularly wind, and emerging uses like offshore energy development need to be part of this picture and rationalized as part of this picture, not only because of the environmental implications, but also from an economic standpoint. Business needs certainty in order to proceed, and the current situation is fairly uncertain, both in terms of regulation and in terms of institutional requirements. So this is a conversation, or the material I'm reviewing is something that has been discussed on the national level for the last several years. There were two high-level commissions here in the U.S., the Pew Oceans Commission and the presidentially appointed U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy, that came resoundingly to the same conclusions in 2003 and 2004. That was, first of all, that our oceans are in significant trouble. The status of the health of the ecosystems and the services that they're providing to us, the benefits they provide, are in jeopardy. We need to do something about that. And secondly, ecosystem-based management, or a more integrated approach where we try to rationalize the range of institutions that participate in management, and the range of laws that we have that are engaged, ecosystem-based management is seen to be part of the solution. Unfortunately, or perhaps expectedly, there wasn't a lot of detail provided by these national level commissions. You know, there's a lot of rhetoric, there's reasonable language about how we need to do things differently, this is why we need to do things differently for ourselves, for our children, for our nation. But how do you make that real? Well, fortunately, we have here today two speakers who have been making it real for quite a long time, and we're going to hear from a local perspective here in Maine how this more integrated approach, particularly focused on community engagement, is working. This call inspired me to redirect a substantial amount of my research effort over the last several years in collaboration with Karen McLeod and over 40 other partners to develop this book that Paul mentioned earlier, Ecosystem-Based Management for the Oceans. And a big part of what we do in this book is to develop case studies, again, of how people are making this concept real on the ground around North America. And I'd be happy to share what we've learned in more detail with those who are interested after the session. Also, I have a copy of the book if you want to look at it. But the three guiding pieces that we developed in consultation, not with just with this group of 40, but a larger national level conversation that's been going on over the last several years, is that there's three key elements, at least three, of taking this more integrated approach. And the first, as Paul alluded to, is that it's a place-based approach, a place that's an approach that's grounded in a particular geography and that considers the entire system, including people. So having people be part of the picture. Secondly, there's a recognition of the interactive and cumulative effects of human activities. So rather than just managing for fisheries or just managing for wastewater treatment, we need to think about those collective connections and what our collective impacts, both negative and positive, are. And the reason why this is so important is that we really need to be explicit about the trade-offs that right now we're making quite implicitly. You know, we have winners and losers in the coastal environment all the time. It's just that we're not being explicit about what happens when we take a particular course of action. How does that affect fish? How does that affect fishermen? What does that mean for coastal development or for our children and their future? So being explicit about these trade-offs, it doesn't make the trade-offs any easier, but it does make it clear what it is we're deciding for and against. And that's, you know, that's a big part of getting to the solution in terms of climate change mitigation and adaptation, but also dealing with the degradation that we're seeing in our oceans. So actions that are consistent with ecosystem-based management or this more integrated approach are varied. There's no one way to implement this framework. But some relevant actions include marine spatial planning, habitat restoration, adaptive management, and long-term ocean observing systems, which provide vital information that helps us understand how these systems are changing through time and whether or not what we're doing differently is actually making a difference. There's a whole host of efforts around the world where people are trying to take this more integrated approach. We'll hear in a few minutes about two that are local. But as I mentioned before, the case study work that I've done thus far and that I'm doing right now with Leila Sievinen, who's here also from Brown, focuses on when ecosystem-based management works and why and how, and not only deals with the ecological or scientific information related to that, but also the important social and institutional context that can contribute to challenges or opportunities. And so this is just a list here of how just to show you how diverse these efforts are, ranging from small-scale efforts in Morro Bay, California, to more regional-scale efforts in Chesapeake Bay, to international efforts on a range of geographic scales that involve, you know, everything from local institutions to federal and even international partners. So this is ongoing work, and I think it's incredibly important to not just theorize or think in theory about how we'd want ideas like this to happen, but actually to learn from the practice of what people are doing, and that's one of the things we're trying to do and why we're here today. So just in closing, before I introduce our speakers, we've seen from the case study work thus far that many places are implementing pieces of ecosystem-based management, but few are doing it in the full way that the commission's laid it out or that we've laid it out in our book, for instance. So there's a disconnect between theory and practice, as one would expect. And understanding that disconnect and trying to bring things closer together, getting the theory closer to the practice, is really vital going forward. Many are in the planning phases of ecosystem-based management. Very fewer initiatives have actually moved into implementation. And for that reason, in part, it's quite difficult to actually point to a place and say, look what they've done. They're taking an ecosystem-based approach, so see what's different. Where we can see some differences are in terms of institutional and social outcomes, and I think we're going to hear about some of those today. But in terms of actually seeing differences in ecosystem health or ecosystem functioning, we're a ways out from that. And I think that's a really important point for us all to talk about and think about. These are long-term efforts that require long-term change, not only in our ecosystems, but also in people, in the institutions that we're part of. So expecting to see a 2 or 3 year turnaround on a radical change in management is really very unrealistic. So again, this is a long-term commitment, and figuring how to measure incremental success and progress with long-term commitment, and also making realistic predictions for how we should expect things to change over time is really, really another big challenge facing us right now. So the questions facing us today are, first of all, do those elements or do the lessons that I'm learning at the national level, do they apply in Maine? What has been learned here in Maine? How can we bring what we're learning here in Maine back to the national conversations that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk? And we'll hear today from Paul Dest from the Wells National Marine National Estuarine Research Reserve, and also from John Sows from Maine DMR, about efforts that they've been involved with that address these issues. And hopefully we'll have quite a lot of time for discussion and participation by all of you. So with that, I'd like to turn things over to Paul. Thank you.